This is Jim Inkster. Happy Mardi Gras to you. Today on Talk Louisiana, we'll hear from conservative columnist Dan Fagan of The Advocate, as well as liberal commentator Tony Brown from Alexandria. They'll square off on the presidency of Donald Trump, now almost 13 months old, and the governorship of John Bel Edwards, 25 months old. President Trump found opposition from both Republican U.S. senators from our state in last week's budget vote, and Governor Edwards faces a daunting task getting lawmakers to reach a consensus on the state budget as a special session starts next week. Also, legal scholar Brian Garner on his book about Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, who died 2 years ago today. Scalia, who was a frequent visitor to Baton Rouge, was a member of the High Court for almost 30 years, and Garner is the author of Nino and Me, My Unusual Friendship with Justice Antonin Scalia. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And later in the hour, we will hear from legal scholar Brian Garner on his book about Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Justice Scalia died 2 years ago today, and Garner is the author of Nino and Me, My Unusual Friendship with Justice Scalia. 877-217-5757 is your number wherever you are, and happy Mardi Gras to you. Glad you're spending time with us on a holiday. And if you're dialing locally in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And we're joined now by Tony Brown, who's a well-known media personality in Alexandria, the owner of radio station KTTP, and a commentator of note, not only there but elsewhere. And we are slated to be joined, if things go according to plan, by Dan Fagan, who is a conservative columnist who has been writing for The Advocate for most of the last year. And his columns are, of course, usually provocative. Once again, your number is 877-217-5757. Governor John Bel Edwards is starting a special session with the legislature and the budget in the works this coming Monday. And to this point, there is no known consensus on how to address what is projected to be a $1 billion shortfall come July 1st. Tony Brown, what's your take on how the governor is dealing with a legislature that's dominated by the opposition party, the governor being a Democrat, and of course the legislature being dominated by the Republican Party?
Good morning, Jim, and to all your listeners. I think he's frustrated. He had to basically be forced into calling this special session. I think he was very adamant about not calling one. I think they've had three, maybe four previous sessions where they tried to deal with the same thing. But it's always kicking the can down the road. And mind you, he's trying to fix problems that was created during the Bobby Jindal administration. So, you know, I really feel for the governor. And, you know, let's see what comes out of this session. You know, there was a committee that was put together to try to do something with TOPS. TOPS seems to be one of the things that they're looking at, and we couldn't even get a consensus out of that committee without them just handing everything over to the legislature. Said we couldn't come up with a solution. So here's some of the recommendations, eight or nine of them. You know, take your pick of which one you want to use. So, you know, I can understand that he's frustrated, and rightfully so.
Now, there are those who say that we have enough money, we're just not spending it properly. One of those is, of course, the U.S. Senator John Neely Kennedy, who was treasurer from 1999 until 2016. Your thoughts about that philosophy, could that be something that would solve our budget woes, to just cut ourselves to essentially prosperity?
You know, Kennedy was the treasurer. You know, I would agree with that much. But, you know, he didn't do anything to fix the problem when he was the treasurer. But now that he's not the treasurer, he's going to try to tell us what we need to do to fix the problem? Well, you were here for several years in that capacity to hopefully fix the problem, come up with a solution. You never did. So, you know, I don't put too much weight in store what Kennedy has to say, particularly as it pertains to Louisiana affairs, now that he's in Washington.
Well, he may be coming back to Baton Rouge to campaign for governor. That's the big rumor of the moment, and certainly John Kennedy is a man who likes to run for office. He was elected treasurer five times. He ran for attorney general once, and he ran three times before he actually won his U.S. Senate seat, ran for the Senate three times. And he also entered the 2003 governor's election before withdrawing when Bobby Jindal got in the race and was supported by Governor Mike Foster, which put an end to John Kennedy's quest for the mansion at that time. But at the age of 66, and by the next election, he'll be right at 68 years old. It would seem that if he wants to be governor, this is his last best shot, Tony Brown.
Well, that much I would agree with you. This probably isn't going to be his last best shot. And the reason why he's coming up with all this negative stuff about what Louisiana hasn't done, what he could do, you know, something that he never did when he was in the capacity as treasurer, is because, you know, a lot of them, not only Kennedy, but many of those folk out there who want to run for governor. And since John Bel Edwards got into office, you know, we've seen it out of Washington, D.C. We've seen our congressional delegation, you know, get him up there and some committee and just berate him publicly before the folks in Washington, D.C. I didn't like that, and I think this is all political maneuvering and just trying to put him in a negative light, put him on a defensive so, you know, they can go out there and see who could be most appealing to that big PAC money and those strong conservatives out there who's willing to put millions, if not billions, of dollars into this next election.
877-217-5757 is your number. Tony Brown is with us, the popular talk host in Alexandria, where he owns the station he is on each day, KTTP. And Dan Fagan may not make it today, and Sashka Boshaw says that we have reached the incomparable Daryl Glasper, the former Metro Councilman from East Baton Rouge Parish, who is now a mover and shaker in high circles in the Republican ranks in Washington and, of course, in his homeland of Louisiana. Daryl Glasper, we're talking about the governor's election next year, and it is next year. Hard to believe it's only 20 months away, the primary is. How do you see it as far as who is likely to be the Republican challenger to Governor John Bel Edwards?
First of all, good morning, Jim, to you and to Tony and to your listeners. Right now, Louisiana has a governor. His name is John Bel Edwards, and I think that there are going to be some formidable challenges to the governor because of some fiscal issues. But you know, he again, it's a year and away, Jim. And you know, one of the things, the reason why I bet right at about 1,000% on your show is because I have to think through the process. You know, I just don't go make off the cuff types of assessments of it. John Bel Edwards, you got to remember, he beat a populist Republican, David Vitter, for governor of the state of Louisiana. That carries weight in itself. So you have to wait and see who the challenge is going to be before you can make any type of assessment of where Louisiana is going to go.
How do you see the budget squabble that has been ongoing now for a few years, and we're starting a special session Monday? Is it possible for a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature to work together?
Yes, when you put the needs of the people first, and stop playing footsie. Now listen to me. One of the things that I have to say that African Americans in the state of Louisiana elected a Democratic governor, and you know what happened? The first thing he did is tried to become a Republican, and that's a fact. You see, listen to me. One of the things you got to say about Trump, and that's why I want to interject him in here right now, because the president of the United States is putting the people of this country first. When you have politicians on both sides of the aisle, will put the people of the state of Louisiana first, regardless if you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, and you have to include everybody, inclusive. Not just running your mouth, but inclusive with issues and policies that affect everybody, and then I think you can work together. And then I think you're going to have a good state.
All right, 877-217-5757. Last week, the House passed on a 240-186 vote a budget that would boost military and non-military spending by at least $300 billion over 2 years, while adding a projected $320 billion to annual deficits over 10 years. The president eagerly signed this bill, but in the House of Representatives, yesterday we were talking about the votes, and I provided some information that was erroneous, but the delegation was split. 3-3 in the House. The Democrat Cedric Richmond voted no, but also voting no was Mike Johnson and Garrett Graves. And voting yes were Steve Scalise and Ralph Abraham and Clay Higgins. Now, voting in the Senate for the same measure, which passed 71-28, both U.S. senators, Republicans, voted no, John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy. So it's the first time we've seen evidence in Louisiana that the Republicans are going against the president. In this case, most notably the two Republican U.S. senators. And mind you, President Trump, when it comes to votes in Louisiana, is the heavyweight champ, having received 1,178,638 votes in his victory here in Louisiana 2 years ago. We'll talk more with Tony Brown and Daryl Glasper. And your number, again, is 877-217-5757. And before we go to the break, Tony Brown, Daryl said that this governor, John Bel Edwards, is governing like a Republican. I would imagine some Republicans would take issue with that.
Well, you know, I think that's a stretch. And in all due respect for Mr. Glasper, I'm glad to have him, to be with him on the show on this morning. You know, you talked about this budget that the president was eager to sign and, you know, how it's going to basically put us in a hole for the next 10 years. You know, one thing that I respected about the GOP was, of anything, that they were fiscally responsible. So I can see the split, not only here in the state of Louisiana, but nationally, where you're having some folk who are going against Donald Trump with this big military push. You know, most Americans are afraid of what's going on right now, you know.
All right, we're going to pause for just a moment and return with Tony Brown and Daryl Glasper on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Sasha Gabonchon is producing, and our guests are Tony Brown, the commentator from Alexandria, and Daryl Glasper, former Metro Councilman from East Baton Rouge Parish. And Daryl is moving in the Republican ranks. Tony generally supports Democratic candidates, and we have a partisan divide not only here in Baton Rouge and in Louisiana, but also in the United States. And that's evidenced by the ongoing fights that continue on Capitol Hill and at the state capitol. If you'd like to comment, once again, our number is 877-217-5757 for Daryl Glasper and Tony Brown. Now, Daryl was on the Trump train long before the president won the election, and he predicted victory for Donald John Trump. And Donald Trump has seen some erosion, if polls are accurate, in surveys across the nation, but he remains popular in certain parts of the country. And in Louisiana, he won this state by 24 percentage points over Hillary Rodham Clinton. And he would probably be a formidable candidate if the election were held today in the 11 SEC states that he carried handsomely, every one of them. The only close race in the Southeastern Conference was in Florida, where the president won by one percentage point. But it's been a chaotic 13 months. 34% of the White House staff has turned over. The president and some of his campaign associates are under investigation. Some have been indicted. One has pleaded guilty in Michael Flynn. Daryl Glasper, with all this chaos going on, how difficult is it for the president to govern?
It's not difficult at all. And I'm going to tell you why I say that. Because the chaos is being created by those who are outside the administration. And let me say this to you. Donald Trump, and I don't see how the man's still standing. I said it on your show before, Jim. With all of the negativity around this president from the media and from the deep state, a lot of people don't understand when you have, and see, this is what you don't want to talk about. You're talking about chaos. The chaos was created by the damn Democrats. All of this stuff dealing with Russia, they colluded with Russia. They doing all of this. And you know what? 13 months later, we still are talking about it. You know why? Because I've said it on your show, and I'll continue to say it. This man is a mega superstar in politics and never been in politics before.
All right. Well, when you say they colluded with Russia, who are you talking about, Daryl?
I'm talking about the Democrats paid for the Jim. Now, let me say this. And it don't take a rocket scientist to understand this now. The Democrats, they paid for the dossier. It was false. they started a investigation on the president of the United States. They started eavesdropping on him. They've broken all kind of rules, regulation, laws, and nobody want to talk about it.
All right. Now, Tony Brown, is that colluding with the Russians, if those statements by Daryl Glasper are true? Is that collusion with the Russians, as he's alleging the Democratic Party has done? Your thoughts, Tony.
I can't speak to where Mr. Glasper is getting his information. I haven't heard anything about the Democrats colluding. Yeah, 16, 17 months later, we're still talking about it because it's important. It's important for the American people to know, did Russia basically help Donald Trump win the election? And, you know, with the Mueller investigation and, you know, the threats of him being fired, not being fired, you know, all the stuff that's coming out of the White House, it's just kind of hard to keep up, let alone to try to be a journalist to try to cover this guy, but just try to keep up on the day-to-day. The one thing I'll say about Donald Trump is he has the news ratings up because everyone I know who never used to even look at the news, the first thing they do when they get up is let me see what this guy has tweeted, what he has tweeted, what he has said, and what he has done now. I think, quite frankly, Donald Trump and his entire presidency is going to implode. And I think this sexual impropriety within his administration and his lackadaisical approach to having any sort of empathy or sympathy for the victims, these two wives who came forward and say, you know, one of his top aides were very abusive, and for him to say, hey, I believe the guy again, you know, who Donald Trump himself is of course, a suspect, I would say, in many of the same type of behaviors that.
All right, we're talking about Rob Porter and Daryl Glasper. This man is now no longer working for the president, but the president has not condemned his actions, and there is photographic evidence that he beat up at least one of his ex-wives, and two ex-wives allege that he was abusive to them. This man did not have a security clearance, and he was working in the White House at the highest levels with privy to sensitive information. Was Rob Porter a good hire by President Trump?
Listen to me. When you have a staff of 400-some people that's working for you, Jim, and let me just tell you, it happened in life. It happened in every sector of the government, movies, everywhere. And when you're made aware of it, that was an investigation. And let me say this to you. Now, everybody want to accuse the president of the United States. Now Jim, I'm going to surprise you now. I'm not going to come on here too much anymore and talking to these damn dummies. I'm really frustrated about the lack of intelligence of people who could constantly accusing the president of the United States and his administration with all the good this man is doing. You got to continue to try to defend what's right. And let me say something. I'm going to tell you something else. As an African-American, and I'm going to tell you what I take great offense of. As an African-American, I take great offense that other black leaders like Tony Brown and the rest of them, and brother, let's just go ahead and later gather down today. The reason why the black community has as many problems is that you all can't determine what's right and what's wrong.
Tony, do you wish to respond to Daryl?
I'm sorry, was that a question for
yes,
me?
Yes, yes.
You know, right is right and wrong is wrong. Like CNN's commercial, apple is an apple, even if you try to tell people that it's an orange. There's one thing that I know in the African-American community is that we embrace truth. And we know right from wrong. So I really don't understand what Daryl's talking about. Now, you know, are we talking about societal? Are we talking to politics? I don't think, you know, his argument is mute to me. I think normal people and most people, regardless of what color they are, know right from wrong. And Trump, on most things, political or otherwise, is on the wrong side.
877-217-5757 or 297-5633, and we will go to the phone lines in just a moment with Daryl Glasper and with Tony Brown, and we have a few folks that we're going to get to who have been waiting patiently. Donald Trump, of course, has been a frequent tweeter, and he tweeted about Elon Musk and congratulating him for the successful launch of the Falcon Heavy rocket, but he said this was an example of American ingenuity, and Elon Musk pointed out that he is from South Africa. 877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. David, you're on the air with Daryl and Tony. Hi, David.
Good morning. Mr. Glasper, given that President Trump has apparently surrounded himself with many people who I believe to be white nationalists, like Steve Bannon and Steve Miller and others, and given the Trump immigration policy, I think that's clearly aimed at making America less black and more white. As an African-American person, if you were in an African country today that President Trump described as a word I can't use on family talk radio, what do you think your chances of being black would be to have a visa or an immigration permit to come to the United States? And do you think that it's clearly racist on the part of the president, or do you support the policy?
Daryl?
You know, I support, as an African-American, I support the policy 100%. Now, let me just tell you why. You're talking about making America black or white again and not black. You don't offend me. You don't offend me one bit, because you're talking to a guy who has traveled abroad, and when your visa is up, your ass is out of there. You can't stay in those people's country. You certainly can't go over there and protest and demand a thing. Now, let me just tell you something right quick. If you don't understand it, you better understand it very, very quickly now. Because I'm telling you, Jim, I'm getting a little bit agitated and frustrated with these people who don't understand. When you start talking about illegal immigration, do you know who that hurt? That hurt the African-American males in this country. It hurt the workforce in this country. It hurt wages. Oh, hold up. Don't start playing the music now.
We've got to take a break, but we will return and get more information and insights from our guests, Tony Brown and Daryl Glasper, and we'll return also to the phone lines and hear more from our listeners. And we appreciate you spending Mardi Gras Day with us. 877-217-5757 is your number. We're back after this pause with more Talk Louisiana on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us. Happy Mardi Gras to you. Glad you're spending time with us. Sasha Gabashon's producing, and our guests are Daryl Glasper on the right, the former Metro Councilman from Baton Rouge, who has become a mover and shaker in Republican circles, recently was a keynoter at the Trump International Hotel, an event hosted by Steve Bannon, former chief advisor to the president. And Tony Brown, popular talk host in Alexandria, a liberal commentator who has a show that is airing daily on KTTP, just got off the air and is spending time with us. 877-217-5757. Jason and Old Jefferson. Hi, Jason. You're on the air with Tony and Daryl. Hi, Jason.
Hi. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
What's your question, sir?
Well, I don't really have a question. I just wanted to, point out that a lot of people are very frustrated with the ignorance in politics. It seems like one of your politicians is frustrated with the ignorance in the voter community. I mean, guys, we're voting for Democrats and Republicans only.
So what's your point?
I don't really have a point. Look, everybody's frustrated.
All right, I think that's an understatement. Thank you, Jason. 877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, there's a really great quote from Sinclair Lewis. He said, "It's difficult to get a man to understand the truth when his salary depends on him not understanding it." And pretty much the truth of our political system right now is, you know, we have the best government money can buy. I mean, I'm pretty disillusioned in terms of what's happening in Washington. I agree with a lot of Republicans who, you know, hate the swamp that's up there. But I got to say, this is ridiculous. I wish C.B. Forgotten was here to help us out. But I do see a lot of hope. There's resistance. A lot of women are running. I just hope we can see a change that really benefits the country and not the elite, you know, the billionaire class. Thank you.
Tony, do you wish to respond to Phil's remarks? He called it the billionaire class. It appears that the haves continue to do much better and the have-nots not so good. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, when 1% of the population owns 90-plus percent of the wealth, that's a quagmire. I mean, you know, I'm not a communist, I'm not a socialist, but you know, this topsy-turvy world that we're living in, that's where a lot of the frustration is coming from, because it boils down to money. It boils down to, can I feed my family? Can I earn a livable wage? You know, we're going back in time with the Trump administration. You know, we're resegregating ourselves in public schools. You know, we have this big push not to let anybody else in the country, even though, you know, with the exception of the Native Americans and the African Americans, and many of whom came over in chains, were forced to come here. You know, everybody else are, you know, were immigrants. So how can you, you know, live in a country that says that, hey, you know, it's about freedom, it's about liberty, and, you know, give us your tired, you're poor, you're hungry, and then let's push the brakes on that.
Edward in Lafayette. Hi, Edward. You're on with Daryl Glasper and Tony Brown. Hi, Edward.
Good morning. Love your show, man.
Thank you.
I know you guys talked about it a little bit ago when you were talking about Mr. Porter, the man who was accused of the abuse. And I have yet to hear anywhere, and maybe you guys can help me with this, has there been any kind of legal confirmation from the police or anything? Is there any like charges ever brought up against this man?
All right. Not that I'm aware of, but Daryl, is this an issue that, independent of whether they're charges, an issue that has relevance to the stability of the Trump inner sanctum?
No, Jim, let me tell you why. And you know, I sometimes I get frustrated, but you all, when I start popping you on your popping your ass on this radio show about the truth, y'all keep playing commercials on me and you don't let me finish my statements. And let me say this to you, Rob Porter don't affect nobody in America, but Rob Porter knows two women. The issues, and I keep telling people this, and when you start talking about immigration, and I'm going to get back on, we're going to get some things straight. Immigration hurt the black community the most. Hispanics that come to this community, and let me tell you something. I made a lot of prediction on your show, and I told you a couple of a month ago that it was the biggest scandal in the history of this country, the Hillary Clinton scandal. And it's coming true. It's unfolding. I'm going to tell you another one right quick. Hispanics are going to replace African American politicians and business people in this country. Just keep leaving the doors wide open. And let me tell you something else. And after it happened, Jim, you're going to see a bunch of Negroes like Tony and the rest of these elected officials. You know what they're going to all be saying? Oh, man, they're wrong.
All right, Tony, are you afraid of immigration? Do you think this will hurt the black community?
Well, I mean, there's kernels of truth to what he's saying. I mean, I've seen it in my own community. You know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, we have a strong, I would say, Hispanic community in Forest Hill. Forest Hill is known for nurseries. They do a lot of planting there, but I've seen that migration come up to Alexandria, and the very jobs that African Americans used to have, those with a high school diploma, whether it's fixing tires, whether it's an auto mechanic, whether it's working in a restaurant, they now hold those jobs. And I would have to agree with Daryl on that aspect of it. But, you know, we've been allowing immigration and immigrants to come into this country for since we've been a country. That's what this country is all about, giving somebody else a chance. If they meet the qualifications, and I agree, maybe we have to, look at these or filter these guys that are coming over that are criminals with criminal history, you know. I would say there's a kernel of truth to what he's saying. It would affect the African-American community, but not only the African-American community, but other communities that depend on those types of jobs as well.
AJ writes, immigrants aren't stealing jobs. Companies hiring them to undercut wages, ditch safety regulations, and weasel out of benefits are. That from AJ to talk at talklouisiana.org. Still time to get in with Daryl and Tony, 877-217-5757. Timothy on Bluebonnet. Timothy, you're on the air with Daryl Glasper and Tony Brown. Hi, Timothy.
Hey, on the issue of immigration, there's nothing wrong with a nation deciding what immigrants they want to let in and what, from what country and what skill sets. Australia does it, Canada does it. There's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. And also, one thing that's always frustrated me about the Democratic Party is their view on education. I feel like the Republicans are more open to charter school vouchers, which will definitely help the black community. And I wish the black community would open their eyes to that fact. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Timothy. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Tony Brown and Daryl Glasper. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Again, Mr. Glasper, is it the damn Democrats, as you call us, who want to claim that the neo-Nazis and white supremacists are good people who want to discriminate against people because of their religious faith and national origin, who kept Mike Flynn as the National Security Advisor after he was under investigation?
Your thoughts, Darrell?
Listen to me. Jim, I have a disdain for the Democratic Party. Let's just make it point and blame, straight up. You know, the Democratic Party hadn't done a damn thing for the black community in the last 30 years. You've been getting 90% of the African-American... Hold up, wait a minute. I'm going to answer the question. Look, they haven't done a thing for the black community at all. And let me tell you why white males are frustrated in this country, because illegal immigrants in the Democratic Party has taken jobs, put regulations on this country that has hurt this country. Listen to me, brother. You talking about frustrated? I'm frustrated by talking about foolishness when you should be talking about issues.
And right now in Louisiana, there are 723,000 registered Democrats who are black, 22,000 registered Republicans who are black in Louisiana. An advantage for the Democratic Party, 32-1 over the Republican Party among Democrats. Mike in Old Jefferson. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning. Trying to kind of focus my thoughts. It's kind of difficult to hear Mr. Glasper, you know, speak about these things. But anyway, I want to get to my original point. I'm curious everyone's thoughts on conservative media, specifically Fox News, and the role that they seem to play in the divisiveness that we've seen in this country. I feel that they're largely responsible for so much of the division that we see. We've normalized Fox as just another one of the media outlets, and we often see CNN sort of spun as the yin to their yang.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Tony, do you think Fox News has contributed to the vitriol we have in America regarding our political process?
Absolutely. And whenever I go into a place, particularly a public place here in central Louisiana, whether it's a hospital, I ask them to turn the television. I mean, I've been a journalist for 30 years. What I see coming out of Fox is not objective. It's very partial. And they have a strong slant towards the right. I mean, you know, we've seen it, and we've seen it for years. And they are part of the problem.
Darrell, is Fox part of the problem, Fox News?
Jim, let me just tell you something. I have a problem with all news that don't tell the truth. All of it. If it don't tell the truth, if you're trying to put a spin on it, you're not telling the truth. And what has happened in this country? They're pitting one against the other. They're pitting one against the other. And let me just tell you something else. You know, most people don't understand this. I'm a Republican, but I'm also an African-American. And I see problems. And I'm going to tell you another thing. I'm going to give you a big surprise this morning as well. There are a lot of African-Americans, and they're all over this country, who think, just like I think, because I'm hearing it, they are sick and tired of not being respected in policies. Now, I'm not talking about spin. I'm not talking about sexual harassment, all this other foolishness. They're looking at policies that affect their lives, their health care, their living, their jobs, their community, and their kids. Now, you watch what I'm telling you, and you're going to see a big drop on them supporting the Democratic Party.
All right. Well, Darrell Glasper, you got the last word today in our discussion with you and Tony Brown, and hopefully we'll have both of you gentlemen back. And, Tony, congratulations on your fine work in the great city of Alexandria. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. And we will return with more Talk Louisiana after this time out on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, and happy Mardi Gras to you. Sashika, I think we're going to have to get Brian back. Brian Garner is slated to be with us. He is a world-renowned legal writer and the author of Nino and Me, My Unusual Friendship with Justice Antonin Scalia. Antonin Gregory Scalia died on this date in 2016, 2 years ago in Marfa, Texas, natural causes. He was 1 month shy of his 80th birthday. And he served on the U.S. Supreme Court from 1986 to 2016, did Justice Antonin Scalia. He was a powerful voice. He's one of those justices who had such a powerful personality and a great legal mind that he probably coaxed a lot of his colleagues into voting along with him based on his presentation on the high court. He was a man who was, of course, educated at the highest levels, at almost all, as almost all Supreme Court justices are, graduate of Harvard Law School in the year of 1960, and a B.A. in history from Georgetown University in 1957. And the renowned legal scholar Brian Garner has written a book, Nino and Me, My Unusual Friendship with Justice Antonin Scalia, who, by the way, was very popular with a lot of liberals. He and Justice Ginsburg, who didn't agree on much in cases before the court, were exceptionally close friends. And good morning to you, Brian Garner.
Good morning. I mean, he was pretty popular with almost anybody who met him. I think a lot of liberal people were shocked by just how charming and exceedingly intelligent he was.
The friendship with Ginsburg is one for the ages. You would think those two would hate each other, but they loved each other.
Well, Justice Scalia had an enormous capacity for friendship. And, you know, friends bond over all kinds of things. The fact that they had differing philosophies of judging didn't seem to stand in the way of their very close friendship. And in a way, it was the same with me. He and I differed on all kinds of issues in terms of personal philosophy, but we loved language. That's what we bonded over, was language. And I think he liked the idea of having a lexicographer and a grammarian in his life, somebody who probably knew, he thought, knew more about the English language than he did, and there weren't very many in that category.
How well did you know him?
Well, we wrote two books together. Our partnership began in 2006. It was really just my asking to do an interview with him caused us to end up becoming friends, and I proposed that we do a book together on advocacy, and we wrote that over a two-year period, and then we wrote a second book on judging, on the art of interpreting legal instruments, legal statutes, contracts, and constitutions for that matter. So we spent hundreds of hours together, and then we ended up teaching together all over the world. So we were very close.
He was not pleased with some of the decisions from the court in the final years of his life, the same-sex marriage decision, the Affordable Care Act decision. Those burned him, but did he take it personally?
No, I don't think he took it personally, but he was, I think, deeply disappointed in the court for rejecting the text and tradition of the Constitution. I happen to be in favor of same-sex marriage personally, but I would have voted with him only because the text of the Constitution says nothing about that, and the tradition of interpreting the Constitution in this country it would not suggest that sort of morphing result that the court found in Obergefell. So that was a decision like Roe versus Wade that he thought was not at all grounded in the text or tradition of the Constitution.
We live in a society now, Brian, in which we have kind of a Cliff Notes version of everything. We condense things and we get our information on the run. The president, of course, he is accused of doing that. I can say I do it on occasion. There are very few real scholars out there anymore, and based on what you're writing about Justice Scalia and others have, it appears that he was a man who got down in the weeds and was a scholar about many things in his life.
That's absolutely true. He was an enormously learned man. He was also very charismatic and sociable, but he was a scholar, and he liked to dig into problems in much more than a superficial way. He had a very sophisticated idea of the proper mode of judging. Basically, there are three ways of approaching interpreting a statute. He was a textualist, and he brought textualism back to the fore. The other two types are purposivism and consequentialism, and they allow judges to impose their own views on the law as opposed to following what the legislature actually said.
Where were you 2 years ago when he died?
Well, he was in far West Texas. I was in what is traditionally called West Texas. I was in Lubbock, Texas, teaching at Texas Tech Law School. And I had just finished a day-and-a-half-long course and had just been, I had 80 students at Tech and had been, I finished the course by regaling them after they asked me to, regaling them with a story or two about Justice Scalia, went to the airport, and an ABC News producer sent me a message, "Is this true?" And that's how I learned that he had died. We had just said goodbye 8 days before. I spent two of his last 3 weeks with him, morning, noon, and night, in Singapore and Hong Kong. And that's the adventures that we had are about a quarter of the book. But it's a very, I think, interesting account of just what his life was like, what he was like, what as a human being, as opposed to the personage that we all know as Justice Scalia.
Professor Garner, can you share one of your stories about him?
Sure. I'll tell you a little one. We were working on reading law back in 2014. We were working on our second book called Reading Law, The Interpretation of Legal Text. We'd been working all day. His assistant walked into the room and said, "Justice Scalia, your 4 o'clock is now ready. Here's your binder." And he said, "Oh, Brian, I've got to go give a talk to some high school students from New Jersey." And he said, "Would you like to come?" I said, "Sure." And he gave this great talk about the separation of powers. He talked to he taught these high school students how the Soviet Constitution is actually much, much better in terms of its assurances than the U.S. Constitution ever was. But the Soviet Constitution had no provision for separation of powers, and that allowed everybody, including the executive, just to thumb his nose at the Constitution and have complete control and tyranny. And the separation of powers is the greatest aspect of the American Constitution. But at the end of that, end of the lecture, one of the students said, "Justice Scalia, what advice would you have for a young person today who wants to succeed?" And the answer was a very memorable one. He said, "Here's what I would say." He paused very reflectively and said, "Here's what I would say. The answer is pretty much the same as it always has been. Do whatever you're doing excellently. Just commit yourself to excellence, whether you're stapling papers mm-hmm. or flipping burgers, no matter how menial the task, if you make a habit of doing things excellently, then your responsibilities will grow and you will have made a wonderful life habit and ultimately succeed in life." I thought it was a great answer.
You say he was arguably the most misunderstood justice of all time. Why?
Well, I think the press likes to report U.S. Supreme Court opinions as if the justices are freewheeling policymakers. And, you know, the report will always say, "Today, the United States Supreme Court dealt a blow to the rights of women everywhere when it ruled that so-and-so." They never report what the text was, what some lawyer or litigant was trying to pull or push the words of the statute to mean. They tend to just report bottom line results. And it's not that judges, you know, conservative judges, liberal judges, if there's a liberal text, a liberal statute, Justice Scalia is going to have a liberal result because he follows the text. But if it's reported as if the judges are simply imposing their own personal predilections on the law, that is a distortion of what a good judge is doing. And I think, on the whole, Justice Scalia's very sophisticated views about legal interpretation and about judging were largely misreported.
The book is Nino and Me, My Unusual Friendship with Justice Antonin Scalia from Brian Garner. Thank you for joining us.
For today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.